This is the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580. Good afternoon, I'm Celeste Quinn. Today on the Afternoon Magazine, we're going to talk about Prozac. In the 1980s, Lauren Slater was seriously ill. She'd been hospitalized several times, suffering from obsessive-compulsive disorder, depression, and other illnesses. Then she was prescribed Prozac. Slater has taken the drug for more than 10 years now. Her life is remarkably better. She's earned a doctorate in psychology. She's married, and this summer became the mother of a baby girl. So Prozac has helped her. But the drug is not a panacea. Lauren Slater still suffers from depression. She faces issues of dependency, and she wonders about the long-term effects of the drug. Lauren Slater has written a memoir, Prozac Diary, about her life and Prozac. It is a reflection on illness and on wellness. In the book, she writes, "Much has been said about the meanings we make out of illness, but what about the meanings we make out of cure? Cure is complex, disorienting, a revisioning of the self, either subtle or stark. Cure is the new strange planet pressing in." I hope you'll join our conversation with Lauren Slater this afternoon. Here are our telephone numbers. Questions, comments, they're welcome. In Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Outside Champaign-Urbana, call us toll-free, 1-800-222-9455. 1-800-222-WILL. Prozac Diary is just out in a paperback edition from Penguin. Lauren Slater joins us this afternoon from the Radio Hall of Fame studios at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. Good afternoon, Lauren Slater. Welcome.
Thank you.
How long had you been ill before being prescribed Prozac?
16 years, actually. The illness started when I was 10, and when I was prescribed Prozac when I was 26, so I'll be about 16 years.
Yeah. Now, you still suffer depression from time to time. Does Prozac lessen the severity of those periods?
Well, yes, I suppose it does. I guess I can say that it does, because since I've been on Prozac, I haven't needed to be hospitalized, and that was what was so frequently happening in my life before I was prescribed the drug. So, although I may still have bouts of depression or obsessive compulsive disorder, it never gets to the point where I actually need to be hospitalized.
Yeah. What were your thoughts and feelings as you considered taking that first dose?
Well, I had a lot of thoughts and feelings about taking that first dose. I mean, one thing I should say is it certainly wasn't the first drug I had ever, the first psychotropic drug I had ever tried. I was really ill. I had been tried on a whole lot of psychiatric drugs. So a large part of me felt like, well, this is just another drug, and it's probably not going to work. You have to understand, I'd never heard of it. When I was prescribed it, it had not yet been completely approved by the FDA, so it was still an experimental stages. So part of me just felt like it wasn't going to work. Nothing else had worked. And then another part of me felt scared. I think any time you swallow a drug, especially a drug that's supposedly going to affect your mind, it's going to alter your mental state. There's a feeling of fear. You don't know what will come over you, who will come over you. Will you remain yourself or won't you remain yourself? There's just so many unknowns. Taking a drug, and especially a new drug, really is an excursion into the unknown.
Yeah. At this time, when you first started taking the drug, it was brand new.
Mm-hmm.
What were you told about it?
Oh, nothing. Nothing at all, just to take it quickly. I remember very clearly reading the package insert, which is always a mistake to do when you get it from the pharmacy, and then you read like all of the things that could happen. And so actually the doctor who prescribed it to me told me very little about what would happen, but assured me it was a thoroughly safe drug. Of course, it's impossible to say that, though, because there simply haven't been enough studies done on these new medications, Prozac included. I remember reading the package insert, though, and reading about, you know, dizziness and sweating and fainting and, you know, all sorts of other horrible things, none of which happened to me.
Yeah. Why do you suppose you ultimately decided to go ahead and swallow that pill?
Well, I think that for me, I really had no other choice. Yeah. I mean, at that point, I was facing a sixth. I was at a point where I was completely unable to function, and my choices were either to be hospitalized again, or to try some new remedy. And I didn't want. I really, really was tired of being ill, and I was tired of going in and out of hospitals. So I decided that I really had nothing to lose at that point. That's true, actually. I had nothing to lose because my life was at a point where it actually really couldn't get any worse.
Yeah. You were really imprisoned.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How long was it before you felt the effects of the drug?
I felt the effects of the drug really very quickly, within 9 days. I felt that my life or my perceptions had been really radically transformed. And it was, really, really a stunning experience. I've had quite a few experiences since then that the birth of a baby, and I've gotten married and I've fallen in love, but none of those experiences have matched the initial days on Prozac, when suddenly you've been ill your whole life and all of a sudden you're not anymore. And one of the reasons why I wanted to write the book is because, while on the one hand it was, I use the word stunning because that I mean that literally. It stunned me. There was a tremendous amount of, I saw a tremendous amount of beauty in the world, mm-hmm. that had been blocked to me before, but I also felt incredibly lost because I didn't know who I was or where I was or how to navigate in this suddenly new culture, which was the healthy culture.
Yeah, yeah. You say you felt blissed out and freaked out, and sometimes you found yourself stunned with grief.
Mm-hmm. And that's the other thing that I think was a big part of my Prozac experience anyway, was there, while you're tremendously grateful for the recession of the psychiatric symptoms, you also, if you've been ill your whole life, the illness becomes who you are. It's your modus operandi. It's your way of explaining yourself. It's your way of explaining the universe to yourself. And to lose that illness is, again, on the one hand, a blessing. On the other hand, you've lost a part of yourself. And that's sort of the double-edged sword that these medications are.
Yeah. If you've never experienced a normal state of functioning, how do you know what to make of it, what to do with it?
Right. And I feel pretty strongly that these drugs, the Prozacs, the Paxils, the Zolofts, the drugs that are called the SSRIs, the selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, work differently than the older psychiatric drugs like imipramine and dazipramine. They do oftentimes work more rapidly, and they do oftentimes work more completely. And that is one reason why they're prescribed so frequently and why they're hailed as being such, incredible drugs. But what the medical community is forgetting is that if you put a person who's been ill for a long period of time on a drug and it suddenly makes them well, there's fallout from that as well. You're going to be dealing with, it's similar to deinstitutionalization. If you take a bunch of people who have been in prison for 20 years and suddenly let them out, you'd think, well, freedom, that's great, that's what we all want. But in fact, those people have no way, they have no coping mechanisms for that new world. And I think that we need to think about that with the drugs like Prozac and Paxil. If we're freeing a lot of people, we can't just free them and then have them go on their own. There need to be programs, or there needs to be some kind of therapy in place for people to renegotiate the new world.
Yeah. It strikes me that you must have felt awfully alone in the early going.
Well, I did feel quite alone, especially because I felt like I should just be really grateful, and I was. But I would say to my doctors, I had all these fears, and they didn't really want to hear about them because they couldn't understand. Well, now I'm well, so what's the problem? They just had never considered that our medical profession is so geared towards just making people well, and that wellness is considered just an organic, natural state. They had never considered that wellness is not necessarily an organic, natural state. It's a cultural way of being, and to put someone in there all of a sudden requires that you give them a map at the very least.
Yeah. We've got a caller waiting to talk with us on line one in Urbana. Let's go to that caller. Hello.
Yes. Good afternoon. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Great. I want to thank the author for the book she has written. It's very brave of you, and I'm going to rush out and get it. I do have a question just from your own personal experience. I am an OC person as well, and I've not taken Prozac. I've taken Anafrinil, and I wonder how much Prozac you take and has your amount changed over the years.
Oh, well, you're asking...
Specifically for OC.
Right. You're asking a really important question. I started out on 10 milligrams of Prozac back in 1986. I now take 120 milligrams of Prozac. And that's one of the things I discuss in the book is the whole, the tolerance issue, that it stops working as well, and you need to continue to increase your dose.
But you started at 10 milligrams.
I started at 10, yes, and I'm now at 120.
Do you find that it controls your OC as much as you would like it to?
No. I mean, it definitely helps. It helps tremendously. I would really like to not have OC. And I still struggle with it. I struggle with it on a daily basis in a sort of mild way, and then I have, like, outbreaks that feel really bad, but that don't necessarily last forever.
Right.
Is that what you experience on Anafrinil?
Pretty much. Pretty much, and I take about 175.
Right. That's actually, in an Anafrinil, you can go even higher than that, though, right?
Right.
Yeah. And so are you thinking of switching to Prozac?
Well, I was going to discuss it with my doctor after hearing you, and I am going to read your book. I hadn't thought of Prozac, although it says it works, but it also worked for your depression, too.
It did, although I was prescribed it for obsessive-compulsive disorder. It one of its beneficial side effects was that it worked for depression. Yeah.
Well, I might discuss a change with him. So I thank you so much for this book, and tell me its name again.
It's called Prozac Diary.
And you spell your last name?
S-L-A-T-E-R.
S-L-A-T-E-R. Thank you so much, and I'm going to continue listening.
Great. Thanks for calling in.
Bye.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. Other calls are welcome. 333-WILL is the number in Champaign-Urbana. Anywhere else you're listening, call us toll-free 1-800-222-WILL. Do the effects of the drug vary individual to individual, and how great a difference can there be individual to individual?
Oh, there's a huge range. Some people take Prozac and feel nothing at all. Some people take Prozac and feel absolutely maniacal and like they, you know, are having panic attacks and breaking out in cold sweats. Other people take Prozac and feel elated. These are all the outlying responses. Other people take Prozac and feel that it helps them. And there's just a huge range of responses, and it's impossible, almost impossible to predict prior to just someone ingesting the drug what their response will be. It's dangerous or considered potentially dangerous to give Prozac to someone who suffers from manic depression because it can, for instance, set off an elated period, a manic period.
Yeah. Now, going from 10 milligrams to 120 milligrams, I know from reading the book that this is something that really concerns you, the Prozac poop out. How high can a dosage go?
Well, that's, again, because there's so much that's not known about Prozac, that's up for grabs. The FDA does not recommend that you take a dose over 80 milligrams. So I'm already, how many milligrams over 80?
40.
40 milligrams over 80. That's under, a doctor's supervision, which is, little consolation to me. I asked my doctor, actually, what's the highest he's ever seen someone on, and he said 180 milligrams. But, the problem with that is that first of all, even if you're willing to go up to 180 milligrams, you're taking real risks because you have no idea what this substance is doing to your body in the short term and the long term, especially at unprecedented doses like that. And the second thing is that even at 180, it will eventually, as they say, poop out, or it's likely to eventually poop out. So that's one of the, you know, the real problems, or even I would go so far as to say curses, of this medication for people who use it for a serious illness and who have success with it, is that it's a limited success. And in a lot of cases, not everybody has the Prozac poop out, but you know, probably 30-40% of the Prozac taking population will experience it.
Yeah. Well, what kind of work is being done on this drug and other psychotropic drugs?
Well, I mean, drug companies are working feverishly too. I mean, just because the profit potential here is huge, working feverishly to put out better and better, cleaner and cleaner, more and more robust medications. Prozac is actually old; it's passé at this point, and so is Zoloft and Paxil. They have newer drugs like Effexor or Remeron that work not only on the serotonin system but on the norepinephrine system as well. So they're sort of a double whammy; they hit two brain systems instead of one. And they'll continue into the millennium. They'll continue to come out probably with you know, more and more effective drugs, which on the one hand is great. On the other hand, those drugs, I'm convinced, will have their downsides and their trade-offs.
Hmm. We've got some other callers waiting to talk with us. Our next caller on line one in Urbana. Good afternoon.
Hi, I have a question. I'm wondering if you could tell me if Wellbutrin is in the same class as Prozac, and if it's another one of those psychotropic drugs, and if you could just give me whatever information you have on that, I'd appreciate it, and I will, I'll listen. Thanks.
Well, first of all, I just want to say that I have my doctorate. I'm a doctor, but I'm not a medical doctor, so anything I say you should not go by. But Wellbutrin is not an SSRI. It's not a selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor. It's actually an older psychiatric drug that's come into fashion recently. It sort of fell out of fashion because it was causing seizures in a lot of people, and they've since figured out a new way of dose releasing so that it doesn't cause those seizures. And it's known to be a sort of very mild stimulant and without necessarily addictive properties, so that people who are on it sometimes feel more energized. Well, they say the euphemism they use is that Wellbutrin is energizing. But actually, it may be more appropriate to say that it is a mild stimulant.
Let's take another call. A caller on line four in Peoria. Good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon. We just received a book by Al Ann Blake Tracy. Are you familiar with her?
Al Ann Blake Tracy? No.
Ann. She wrote a book. Is Prozac, is it a panacea or a Pandora? This is a 423-page book. And I was just wondering, and there she writes about the different classes, antidepressants, Prozac, Zoloft, Paxil, Levin, Lovex. Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with any of those?
Oh, yeah, those are all SSRIs. Those are all chemical cousins of Prozac. They're all in the same family.
What are the results of people that take it over the long run?
Out of any of those SSRIs?
Right.
Well, that's the problem, that I'm one of the people who've been on the drug the longest in the country because I was put on it before it was released into the mainstream market. And there have been no studies about what the results are long term. I can tell you for myself, and I write about it in the book, that I have experienced some cognitive decline, I guess I would say, memory problems that may or may not be related to the drug. No one knows. It really is just an unknown at this point.
Does this make people sleepy when they're driving a car?
It depends. Some people take Prozac and fall asleep. Other people take Prozac and, you know, want to go climb a mountain. Paxil and Luvox are more likely to make you sleepy. than Prozac. But these would be great questions to ask your doctor or your pharmacist.
Well, this is for a friend of ours that got in an accident. He was taking Prozac, and we're going to give him this book so he can read it.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, Prozac can cause sleepiness. That can be one of the side effects.
I want to thank the caller for his call this afternoon and invite others to join us. This is the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580. My name is Celeste Quinn. This is the Afternoon Magazine, and our guest this afternoon is Lauren Slater. We're talking with her about Prozac. She's the author of Prozac Diary. The book is now out in a paperback edition from Penguin. I was wondering, Lauren, if you would read a passage from the book for us.
Mm-hmm.
This is where you are at home in your basement apartment, and you're thinking about taking the first pill. It's page 10, and yet I did not take this new pill. And I want to talk with you about this idea of the doctor and giving you this medication, and in such an intimate way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I would like you to read that to us, and then we can talk about it.
Okay, so I'll start with, and yet I did not take this pill.
That would be great.
And where? And should I just go to the end of that paragraph?
I was thinking, yeah, that would be great.
Okay. And yet I did not take this new pill. Back at home in the basement apartment where I lived, I looked and looked at it. I touched it to the tip of my tongue, then moved it away. This was not a tease, the drawn-out flirtation that will later come to love. This was fear. Maybe more than anything else, taking a pill, especially a recently developed psychotropic pill about which researchers have more questions than answers, is always an exercise in the existential, because whatever happens, happens to your body alone. Each time you swallow a pill, you are swallowing not only a chemical compound, but yourself unmoored. You are swallowing the sea, the drift and the drown. A pill makes the inscrutable Sartre solid, brings to life the haunting solitude of a Munch painting. It is not the doctor's job to populate the painting, but if he has a flair for the medical arts, maybe he will. The Prozac doctor, for all his style, couldn't. Psychopharmacology is the one branch of medicine where there is no need for intimacy. Neither knives nor stories are an essential part of its practice. And in its understandable glee that it might finally move psychiatry into a position as respectable as surgery, it risks forgetting, or maybe never learning, what even many a surgeon knows, that you must smooth the skin, that you must stop by the bedside in your blue scrub suit, that language is the kiss of life.
Mm. It seems to me that you have a real talent for the kiss of life language, and missing this from your doctor, that had to be really hard.
Well, I think that actually, I have to say that I don't think that my doctor is especially deficient in this area. He's not especially deficient in this area. Psychopharmacologists have 15 minutes in which to see you, evaluate you, drug you, dose you, and get you out the door. And so for them, it's a very mechanical procedure, while for the patient, it's this whole existential, it's this entry into this existential land. And so you're getting this clashing of these two needs. It has always been difficult for me to, I still see the same Prozac doctor, and we've never been able to really have after all of these years, we've still, like, never really had a conversation. It's pretty unbelievable. And that's just because of the way psychopharmacology and psychiatry is molded. It is in very short increments.
Yeah.
Time-wise.
Yeah. Again, language is the kiss of life. Just a wonderful phrase. And as I said, I think you really have a gift for that kiss of life. When you were ill, how was that gift affected, and how has Prozac affected your talents for language?
When I was ill, I've always been a writer, both pre and post Prozac. But pre Prozac, it's very hard to describe. But I was a different kind of writer. I was a writer I wrote more surreal, intense short stories and poems. They, I think, in some ways were more daring than the prose that I do now. They were, in some ways, more imaginative. And I would oftentimes sort of, go into worlds that were dreamlike or surreal. Now I still, now I'm more of an essayist. I stay pretty much in this world. And while I still love language and try to use it in ways that are fresh, I feel that my imagination is just, it's less visceral, it's less sort of primitive from the heart and more analytical. I rely more on my head and less on my heart post-Prozac. Hmm.
Let's talk with another caller on line one in Urbana. Hello.
I am the caller who you talked to first. I wanted to thank you for pointing out how different each medication is for every person. One of the reasons I was thinking of changing to Prozac is that I do have some cognitive problems on Anafrenil and just some muscle weakness on Anafrenil. And I wondered if those two were things that you experienced, again, knowing everybody's experience is different.
Well, Anafrenil and Prozac are in two entirely different families. You're taking Anafrenil is while it works on the serotonin system, is more similar to a tricyclic. So, no, I haven't experienced any of those effects on Prozac. But Prozac has far fewer side effects than Anafrenil. Far fewer reported side effects, I should say.
May I ask what side effects you personally had on Prozac?
Yeah, I mean, to me, the most sort of devastating side effect has been the tolerance. I don't know if you can call that a side effect, but that it's pretty much wiped out my sex drive. So that's a side effect. And I have real trouble with memory. I mean, like much more. And of course I'm aging. I mean, I'm not aging that much. I'm in my 30s. So, so I don't know. I mean, I could attribute it to just the process of getting older. But I really feel, and as I've gone around the country talking to Prozac takers, a number of people have said to me, my memory is just so, it's so bad. And that's not a side effect that's reported in any of the scientific literature, but it's a side effect anecdotally that I've heard about and that I myself have experienced. Also, disrupted sleep. Prozac does stuff, weird things to your sleep. It makes your sleep very choppy and I think increases your REM sleep and decreases your deep sleep, so you might have,
some changes there.
You might not feel as rested, and it can have a jittery. It can make you feel jittery sometimes as well.
Is there any studies of long-term usage? I have been on Anafrenil for about 6 years now. And is there any place one can tell one's side effects to so that other people might, that a real long-term study would be used?
Well, we would hope that Eli Lilly, who are the makers of Prozac anyway, would be collecting that kind of data. But they're not, and that's one reason why I wrote the book. I mean, I can't provide data because it's one person's experience, but it's subjective data. No one is collecting objective data about what's happening to, the people who have stayed on this drug, say, for 6-7 years or more. So, no, it's simply, the only data that Eli Lilly has collected and has actually published has been data from studies of people who have been on the drug for 6 weeks.
That's
so
nothing.
It's just a huge, huge gap. No, there are no studies.
Do you find that you perspire a lot on Prozac and that you're always warm and your temperature gauge seems, your personal physical temperature gauge seems to be totally different?
No, but the reason why that's happening to you on Anafrenil is because Anafrenil affects the central nervous system, and so increased sweating is one of the side effects of a tricyclic, which is what you're on.
Uh-huh.
Prozac, which is an SSRI, it affects only the serotonin system in the brain, has no central nervous system effects. So I don't have any increased sweating. I can tell you when I took tricyclics, though, that was one of the side effects. It was terrible.
Do you think that any of these newer drugs that you described, I didn't catch their names, which work both on serotonin and on the norepinephrine, do you think that those would be useful for somebody on OC? Has anybody done a study on them for OC?
No one's done a study, but there's anecdotal reports that they do work for some patients with OCD, although they're not formally approved for OCD like anaphrenil and Prozac are.
Okay. I can't thank you enough for sharing your experiences.
Well, thanks for calling in.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Can you do anything to offset the side effects?
Well, I mean, the side effects of Prozac are so much less serious than the side effects of, let's say, anaphrenil.
Uh-huh.
I spent 6 years on the tricyclics, anaphrenil, imipramine, dazipramine. Those side effects are just, you know, the sweating and your heart racing, and those are, you know, constantly feeling tired. Your mouth is dry. Prozac has relatively few obvious side effects. You know, the one that most people complain about is sex drive. So it depends on, you know, how important that is to you. There's nothing that you can do to reverse the side effects of Prozac, the effect that Prozac has on your libido. You have to decide whether or not you want to have less sex or not.
Yeah.
How do I deal with it?
Yeah.
Well, I have less sex. And it's actually, not to be crass about it, it's a problem between my husband and myself, because, I mean, our libidos are really, really different, and that is in large part due to Prozac. So it's just something that we have to negotiate as the relationship goes on, and it's something that we've been able to negotiate. I'll tell you, for me, it is, like, not a problem at all, though, because I would, like, the choice between, you know, having good sex and being sane, I would way, way rather be sane. I'm very willing to give up sex for my mind. I mean, that's no problem. Like, for other people, I hear that they go off it because they don't want to make that trade-off. For me, I'm just so happy to be able to think clearly.
Yeah. Well, also, I think you could fairly say that Prozac has allowed you to fall in love.
Yes. Prozac, I think, has definitely allowed me access to love and to sensuality, even while it's reduced some of the, you know, specific stimulating parts of sex. It certainly hasn't reduced the sort of the overall kind of erotic experience of loving someone.
Yeah. And now you have a baby girl, couple months old.
Yes.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
What were your concerns about taking Prozac while you were pregnant?
Well, I had a lot of concerns about taking Prozac when I was pregnant, because, you know, even though my obsessive compulsive disorder is largely cured through Prozac, I'm still a very thorough person. And so before I got pregnant, I did a lot of research and spoke with many perinatal specialists on the effects of Prozac on a fetus. Eli Lilly has a registry of 1,000 births that they've documented, women who have exposed their fetuses to Prozac. I was told that, and studies showed that it was more or less safe. No one can be sure. There's a statistically insignificant rise of minor birth defects in Prozac-exposed fetuses. No one knows what the long-term cognitive or physical defects are, if any. So I had to decide whether or not that was a risk I could take. I decided before that I wanted to expose my child, the risk my child would be taking. I decided before I got pregnant that I would stay on the Prozac, because it seemed like the risks, the benefits outweighed the risks. As soon as I got pregnant, as soon as that stick turned blue, I immediately went off the Prozac. So much for my resolve not to go off of it. And so I was off it for about 6 weeks, and then I completely relapsed and had to go. And I know the choice then was, and the relapse was so bad, the choice was either to abort or to go back on the drug. And because when you're pregnant, what they don't tell you, and what's so important, is when you're pregnant, your blood volume increases by 50%. So you need more of the drug in order to get an effect. And I was not told when I consulted with perinatal specialists. So that you're taking more of the drug, so the fetus is being exposed to more of the drug. So I found myself, I needed to not only go back on the drug, but I needed to go back on the drug at this really high dose, 120 milligrams. And the whole thing was hard. The whole decision making around that was horrible. But it was the choice was either to do that or to not continue with the pregnancy, because I was completely unable to function.
Going back to the idea of the identity of illness and then trying to find your way to an identity of wellness. What was the most difficult part of that process for you?
Going from the illness identity to the wellness identity?
Yeah.
I think giving up the specialness that illness sort of, illness in its own way. I mean, our society, we kind of fetishize illness in its own way. We certainly, you know, we link, I'm talking about mental illness, but even physical illness to some degree. It's, you know, when you're ill, illness is linked to creativity. It's linked to, you know, even genius. It's certainly, you get a lot of breaks when you're ill. If you can't do something, it's because you're ill. So you make a lot of excuses for yourself. You get special care. You don't need to be as responsible and independent. In fact, you're not required to be responsible and independent at all. And, you know, there was a large part of me that really, really liked being in hospitals. I mean, it's nice. It's kind of, you know, the image of a mental hospital that most people have is not, in fact, how most mental hospitals are. I mean, you know, it's like kind of like being in a motel with nurses all over. You know, it's definitely, it has its nice parts. And needing to give that up and really stand on my own two feet and to say, if I can't do something, it's not because I'm ill, it's because I can't do it. Needing to take responsibility for myself.
Yeah.
That was the hardest part.
Yeah. You didn't need an alarm clock for years.
Right, right. And never needed an alarm clock. Always had the institution always has its bells, but just, you know, having to wake up on time and learning to set the alarm clock. But even more than that, learning, going back to school, and if I didn't get good grades in school, it wouldn't be because I was ill. It would be because I couldn't do it. And knowing my limitations and knowing my talents and being able to stand by them. And without illness, you can't duck out that easily.
Hmm. Maybe you'd read another excerpt from the book. The one I'm thinking about is a journal entry.
Mm-hmm.
It's titled February 25th, and it's found on page 95. And I think this is a really, really, you really have a gift for writing.
Thank you.
And I think this really will give the audience a sense of your transitioning.
So I'll start. So should I read the whole entry, or?
Yeah, I think we have enough time for it, and
okay.
I think that'd be a nice way to wrap up.
Okay. So February 25th, setting an alarm clock, the meaning of CD, money market, FICA, a weekly wage, how to rock. This is a list of all the things I have learned through Prozac. I should also add cooking. My students and I baked cornbread in the school's kitchen the other day, and tonight I decided I could save more of my salary if I prepared at least some of the things from scratch. Also, I enjoy it, the measuring and sifting, the slow rise. I was making pumpkin muffins. I knocked over the entire canister of King Arthur's flour, and the floor went white and drifty. Shit. I kicked at the dusty dunes. I tried scooping some up, but because housekeeping is not yet on my what I've mastered list, I found a little frizzled fly in a mound. I went to sweep it up, but alas, I have yet to buy a broom. Same old story. I never stopped to consider the need for a broom before, when I was ill. Once upon a time, when I was ill. I knelt before the flower then and let it fall through my fingers. It was incredibly soft. Talc on a grandmother's cheek. I pressed my hand into it, and then I saw the imprint of my hand like the paw print of a preserved dinosaur. A memory came to me then, not a buried memory, resurfacing to click the terrible truth into place, but a simple recollection, there, kneeling in the flower. It used to snow and snow. I was 6, maybe 7 years old. Snow landed on the dried rose bushes in the slats of our shutters. The yard was enveloped, the trees reverent in their robes. I always went outside in this kind of weather. It seemed to me the angels were dropping stars from the sky. It seemed to me I was called, but could not say why or by whom. Lowering myself into the fresh snow, turning over, opening my arms and legs, swish and sweep, then rolling out to inspect my mold. It was never quite right. A crooked wingspan, a marred head. A compulsion came over me. Do it again and again. All around my yard I tromped, lowering, swishing, sweeping, never to come out right. The next morning, I would waken to sun and see the yard covered with my frantic forms, aching attempts towards something I could not name. And the flower was snow, and the old little compulsion came back to me then, the old crazy little compulsion, as most are. Make yourself right, the urge seemed to say. Make your lines sleek. Aim for a symmetry so complete it closes every crack. I am not supposed to have these sorts of thoughts on Prozac. Apparently, the sick me is still somewhere here. She is hiding behind the branches of my bones. She is peeking out, playful, coy, and pained. Her voice must mix with mine. I surrendered to it. I surrendered to the compulsion, let the world narrow back to who I once was. Lowering myself into the flower was a reaching back, scary and soothing all at once. I became that girl. The windows of my house are a distant ship light in the sea of snow. My mother moves inside. I am still hers. When I stood, I saw myself in the flower white. It was not a perfect image of me, but something messy and incomplete. A small voice, a six-year-old, urged, "Try it again. You must try it again," in a tone too intense for the task at hand. I considered trying it again, but I am 26 now, not 6, and I am now on medication whose purpose is to quell these anxious quests. And as I stood there, I felt the urge dim until I could no longer sense its heat. Prozac is a drug of cool and calm. But like every angel I've ever made, I see now that Prozac is imperfect, that through the cracks in its chemistry, bits of old illness come through. Maybe a day of depression here and there, a moment of fierce need. It recedes and you are left with space again. Shush, the space says. You are grateful. Yes, I am grateful. I looked at the flower girl, soft, a little sloppy. I leaned back down, not with compulsion, but with curiosity. I would not correct her. I would choose her. I touched the span of her arms, the wide V of waking legs. Then I stepped back, observed her from afar. I am observing her even as I write this. She is waving goodbye. She is opening to receive. She is dust and light.
Mm. Thank you for reading that.
Thanks for having me read it.
Thanks for writing this book. It's really a marvelous book.
Thank you.
You're going to be at a bookstore later today in Chicago, are you not?
Yeah, Women and Children First.
Okay, and what time are you going to be there?
I'm doing a reading from 7:30 to 8:30.
Okay. We do have some listeners in the Chicago area, so
okay.
To those folks up there, if you're listening and if you'd like to meet our guest Lauren Slater and hear her read from Prozac Diary, drop in at the Women and Children First bookstore in Chicago. And that's, again, at 7:30?
Yes.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for talking with us this afternoon.
Thanks for having me.
And the best to you and your family.
Oh, thanks so much.
Okay, take care.
Bye-bye.
Lauren Slater has been our guest this afternoon on the Afternoon Magazine. Look for her book, Prozac Diary. It's published by Penguin. It's just out in a paperback edition. And Lauren joined us this afternoon from the Radio Hall of Fame studios at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. Our thanks to the folks there at the museum.